The KM Football Podcast. Exclusive interviews with the biggest names in Kent football.
Welcome to this week's KM Football Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Panting, and I'm back on the road to meet our latest guest. He only came to Kent football last season, where he guided Welling to third place in National League South and a playoff final defeat against Woking. He's probably best known for successful spells at the likes of Lewis, Farnborough and Whitehawk, but he's also managed Northwich and Macclesfield up north. Fortunately, he landed a job last month. He's already making his mark with back-to-back away wins. He's promised me he has some cracking stories to tell as well, so it's a very warm welcome to the new Dartford manager, Steve King. Good to see you, Steve. Thanks for your time, as always. We'll start with Dartford. How have you enjoyed your first few weeks in charge?
It's good. A lot to sort out, a lot of stuff to do. It's not straightforward. Obviously getting to know everybody at the club, is quite a lot of people that are here and work in the club and the community stuff, etc, etc. And obviously getting to know the players.
You came in with the team struggling. You've picked up those couple of away wins. You also had the weekend and off as well. How much of those away wins given you heart that, you know, you are going in the right direction and the players are buying into what you're trying to do?
I think, you know, Tony came in and done 6 games, and I think 4 in the league, 2 wins, 2 defeats in the league. Tony came in and steadied the ship. And I've sort of really just took it on from there, really. Trying to get the players to buy into different things you want to do or things you see or things like that, and styles of play. So, like I always said, I'm not getting carried away. It's a work in progress. I've had a couple of wins and a draw with Chippenham, which was probably one of the better results considering they hadn't lost for 10 games and had the best defensive record in the division. So 7 from 9, I think, is a decent start.
2 wins, as I say, it's moved you up to 13th. Expectations are obviously on you because of your track record anyway. Has that just raised the bar a little bit too soon, possibly?
Yeah, not for me. I'm quite level-headed, and I just feel it's... we just got to take each game as it comes. I do believe that where we are as the group at the moment, we're going to win 1, lose 1, draw 1, win 2, lose 2. I think that's where we are at the moment as a group. So the more we get working with the group, the more I interact some new bodies in with that group, I think we'll go from strength to strength. But I think where we are right now is about where we are, if that makes sense.
You made 4 or 5 signings already. 1 or 2 have gone out the door as well. When you go into a club at this time of the season, is that the sort of numbers you'd be expecting to change straight away, or would you like to have done more or done less even?
I think the beauty that I had, that most people wouldn't have going into the level, I know the level inside out. So I knew the whole of Dartford's team without being involved with Dartford. I knew about the players. I've come up against them over the years. I've seen them this year a couple of times. So I knew exactly what I was seeing. But obviously working with people, you as an individual could get more out of people than other managers may get out of people. So that's what I've always felt one of the strengths were, players play for me in a different way than they do for someone else. So we've come in, I looked at areas that I felt I needed to strengthen straight away. I felt that they were fullback areas. That was what I felt straight away. Losing Winter to an injury that's been playing right back. And that sort of a longer term, I needed to bring someone in that was dynamic, that could get up and down. I brought obviously Jordan Gibbons in. I knew it was a transition that was going to take a bit of time because he hasn't played for a while. He didn't do a pre-season, for example. And I knew he's the kind of character that would get better and better as he plays games, and which is proof of my point from the first game to the third game. He's just getting better, and he will just keep getting better. And he will make being a place where he can get up, down, up, down, up, down without blowing up a gasket after 50 minutes. So then obviously we had the left-hand side where we had Mark playing. He'd been out a long-term injury. He come back. He wasn't quite. His head was telling him, you know, his legs couldn't do what his head was telling him. So that's because he'd been out a long time. But I couldn't wait for that situation to develop. I needed to get someone in. So obviously I've worked with Liam Gordon before, who was at Dagenham. I worked with him at Whitehawk as an 18-year-old, and I knew how good he is. You know, he's an international, and he's played in probably 75% of their games. So he can fit the other side where he can get up and down now, and I think people see that in the Hampton game, especially first half. So that was important to get the fullbacks going, because Bonner had been playing at left back occasionally, and he's just going to do a steady job. He's not going to really get up and down. He's just going to sit in and defend. So that changes your game, how you want to play. So that was the first thing to get me fullbacks going. then Marsh Brown became available, and I worked with Marsh Brownie, and when I worked with him for a season, he was absolutely on fire. And he, like I said, he was going to go to the Championship. There was a move already done and dusted for him to go. Then he got a bad injury on his hamstring, was out for 4 months, and it killed that deal happening. So football don't wait around, as you know, it just keeps going on. So the chance to work with Brownie again, I felt that I could get him back to where he was, because he's still only 22, 23, whatever his age is. So I felt there's a dynamics there of pace, athleticism, can go past people. So there you're starting to implement a little bit of style. And then obviously we brought Elliot in. Elliot knows his way around this level, regular scorer of 20 goals in this division, and played higher at Dagenham, and he's epitomises that leader from the front. He'd chase everything, lost causes, and that gets the rest of the team going. So I felt we never had that kind of style forward. So the new boys have fitted in really well, and it's important for me that they do hit the ground running, because you're making changes and you may be letting people go, and people are thinking, oh, you know, is he going to be better than that? And I think what's shown evidently in the first couple of games that the players that have come in are good players, and have fitted in well. You know, some have scored. Elliot scored in a couple of games, Marsh Brown scored. So they've come in and done really well, which was important.
When you take over a manager's job, and you know, you come in during the season, does that present different challenges to when you come in during the close season? You've got the summer to build and shape it the way you want.
Yeah, 100%. You know, if you look at my record, every club that I've either won the leagues or got in playoff finals, I've built from the beginning. It's every club. I've never inherited something and I've gone on and won a championship. So yeah, that's massive. So I'm just trying to implement changes now that are for the future as well. They're not just short term, like 6 month deals. They're players that I think have a good age that can take us to the next level, or certainly improve where we are, our league position we're in now.
Are you enjoying being back in as well? She had a couple of months out, albeit you watched the game probably more often than the managers who are probably in the job as well.
Yeah, no, I watched nearly 40-odd games from then. It was mental how many games I watched. I did a lot of commentary work as well, covering the leagues in the conference. So I got to see sides and players and teams. I did have 3 or 4 offers to go back in immediately, one within a couple of days or one day of leaving Welling. But I didn't think it was right. The whole thing wasn't right about it. Different offers came up in between us. Just didn't think they were quite right. It was ticking that box, but not that box. And obviously, when the Dartford situation came about, and you know, it ticked every box for me.
I was going to say, what's different about Dartford? Is it the size of the club, possibly?
I think the setup is here. The stadium's here. The infrastructure is what we need to build on. Obviously, it's got everything here, and it's good people here. I think they got a fan base, you know, hardcore, if I say 1,000. But I like the challenge of, can we get that up? Can we produce good football that brings people back? Oh, what's going on down there? Can we start climbing the league and then get near the 1,300, 1,400, that sort of mark? And then can we get to the next level within my period of time here and get near the 18, 19, 2,000 mark? That's my little plan in my own head that I'm setting targets.
When you took the job at Dartford, it was quite an extensive process in terms of the amount of time they took. They took their time appointing you, and obviously it was quite a lengthy interview that you held as well, by all accounts.
Yeah, but I think they had to make the right decision. It was their first sort of decision where Tony had been here for so long and been a manager, and then they made a decision to bring Adam and Jamie in. 18 months, I think they were here 16 months, so they felt that they nearly got it right with that one. You know, they go, be fair to Adam and Jamie, going into the end of last season, going into the last game of the season, they was in a chance of the playoffs. And the first managerial job between the pair of them as a joint venture, I think it's a decent shout that they've nearly made the playoffs with one game to go. I know they got a lot of stick and they ended up in 10th place, but I think when you look at it, no one's got a divine right because of the size of the club or what it is to say we should be in there. Tony done ever so well at the club, so it was always the next person was always a hard act to follow. And when you got two aspiring coaches put together to try and push them on, it's always a big ask, a hard ask, to follow someone that's been brilliant for Dartford.
And what's Tony been like working with so far? You've been here, what, 4 weeks or so? He's still quite influential?
Yeah, but Tony just lets me get on with it. You know, Tony, you know, knows I'm an experienced manager. I'm, you know, I'm not a spring chicken. I'm like, Tony's said to me, if you need me, I'm there. So if I ever need to fall back, I'll talk to Tony about things. We talk. We've got that kind of relationship, and that's important. Always to have that bond and that relationship where we can, if I'm down, I can talk to him. Or you know, because you're never too old for advice and things like that. But Tony's been brilliant. He just said, crack on, do what you got to do. We talk about things. I don't have to run things by Tony or anything like that. Just if I've got a player, I'm going to sign him. Just let Tony know I'm going to sign a player, and that's it. It's done. There's no Tony don't get involved with that side of things. I'm the own man.
Talk about last season at Welling first. We talk about how it ended in a moment, and obviously the cuts you had. But I know one of the things you were particularly proud of was the home record, and you really did impress at Parkview Road.
You know, I'm not silly. I've been around a long time in non-league, and you know, you get. I know when I first went to Welling that I'm not sure if they wanted me, but like the head of the supporters there always said, it was only because you used to beat us or do well against us that people used the enemy. But then getting you as the manager, it was like, oh, it's the best decision they made in, you know, in the supporters' eyes. And I think we absolutely made that place a fortress. It was a fortress, you know. Nearly 50 points, I think, out of 63. It's an incredible home record. It's the best of my whole career. So, that mean, the fan base went up. We averaged nearly 778 or nearly 800, considering it was 500 the season before, which is, it's a big increase, really. And I know it's in the hundreds, but it's still a decent increase. And I'd like to think that it was because the football we played, a certain style we played, obviously winning games helps. So yeah, we've done everything in our power, and that's what I like to do at football clubs, get the football going, play decent football. People say, oh, let's go and watch them. We know something's going to happen today, whether it's we win or we lose, we give everything to the game, and we'll do our front foot team, we'll do our best to try and win those games.
Did it kind of snowball the home form in that regard? Because you just sort of, once you win one, you win two, and all of a sudden you're up and running.
Yeah, but I think people come and feared us, if I'm honest. Everyone, you know, it wasn't a clever tactic just to tell everybody how good our home form was, but I'm sure it might have played. People realised, well, their home form, I didn't realise it was that good, because not every manager studies every little thing. You know, I study home form, away form. Do they play down the hill? Do they play up the hill? When do they, you know, I study all of that, and how many points did they get from going down the hill second? You know, that's me as an individual. I'm not sure everybody does that. But we just felt that near enough every time we were playing, everybody was behind the ball with opposition. There's only two teams that beat us there, and it was a 1-0 Concord and a 3-1 Billericay. And I mean, we battered Billericay that night, and we should never have lost the game ever. Sometimes teams are beaten before they even take the pitch when you're in that great home form.
The budget cups obviously happened during the season. You found that particularly tough at the time. When you look back now, how do you think of those times?
It's one that I'll always stick up for managers. Because a lot of managers and friends that I know and people get stick about budgets. A manager will always spend what's given. It's simple as that. They can't spend any more because it's down to the football club that control that part. You know, we will set a budget at Welling at the start of the season. And it's well documented. We got a lot of injuries. We did get early on. So Mark at the time, Mark Goldberg, just said, go and sign some players. Brilliant. And I don't know if you remember when I was doing my interviews, I was always saying, we've got to thank Mark for you know, letting us go and sign some players in this circumstances, thanks for the backing, etc. So we always knew we were going to have to balance somewhere in between. So we did. When players come back from injury, we loan players out, and then we got back to the starting budget. Fine, again. Then we was at the starting budget, and then it became around, I think it was around Christmas time, where the budgets were slashed even vastly more, to the point where you're having like, wow, you know, we've got to get rid of five senior players, staff, and you're left with sort of 14 players. And you was asking players in that team, one player in particular, I won't name, but play for nothing. One was playing for £50. So all of a sudden, you're 14 players, or 12 of them are really getting paid. But you had to do what the owner asked you to do. It's as simple as that. That's what you're there to work together. You try and work it through. And that's what happened. And what happened at that point, we had, it's not documented, people don't know, but as a group of players, we had a meeting, and we just put it, this is how it is, this is what it is. We either sulk about it, or we just crack on with a set mentality that, you know, we're not going to let this derail us. And I think from the point of us getting in the playoffs, we never ever come out of the playoffs. Never ever come out of the playoffs. And we just kept winning and winning and winning and just churning out result after. In the end, it wasn't no magic formula that you thought, oh yeah, I'm all of a sudden I'm this, I'm that. It wasn't like that. It was, I would laugh sometimes when we won a game and I'm in the dressing room giving the team talk to the boys at the end of the game. And I'm laughing because I'm thinking, wow, you lot have gone through brick walls, everything to a spirit that is easy said, but it's, they were a group that galvanised and stuck together and had each other's backs. And that's not easy because there's always bad eggs in dressing rooms, but we never had a bad egg in there.
Season ended, of course, in defeat at Woking. I know there was a contentious penalty in the second half that wasn't given for Welling in that game. How do you look back on that final now?
Proud that we got there, immensely proud. I think when you think we everyone was talking about Torquay and Woking neck and neck for the championship, and no one was even mentioning us. We hardly got any press throughout the season, which was good because no one bothered about us. You know, non-league paper was always Torquay, Woking. I thought, oh, it's cool. We just carry on about what we're doing, carry on about our business. And then to think that we finished third, 2 points behind Woking, and when we played them, when we were 3-1 up, and we end up drawing a game 3-3, that could have been the difference between second place and third place. And at home, we'd have beaten anybody. We beat Torquay at home 2-0, so we'd have beaten anybody at home. So them just little moments that were the difference between maybe getting the game at home, like we took care of Chelmsford at the time, albeit a little bit nervy at the end. We took care of them at the end. We felt if we'd have had Woking at home, it would have been a different scenario. But in the same breath, I sit back and think, that might have happened, but it would have been the same scenario for me at the end of it.
Things ended quite quickly after that playoff final when you left the club. Could you see it coming? Were you surprised that it happened?
Obviously, it's stuff that I don't really want to talk about and can't. But I remember picking up on something over the last couple of months. It might have been one of your newspaper articles or your online things where you had a conversation with Mark, and he said his comments were, he was itching in the director's box to get back involved, and he felt that he wanted to get back as a manager. I think in that whole statement, in that whole article that you did with him, I think the answers were all, it was all answered there. It was all out there. I didn't need to say anything, and I haven't come out and said anything. And I've always been one that's kept myself, when I've come out of clubs in not a good way. Clubs have been not right to me. And it's not been the other way around. The clubs have not been right to me. And I felt like I've always kept my powder dry. I never said anything. But that article for me, what I read of yours online, just said it all, really.
You just mentioned wages earlier and how supporters, I guess, perceive wages. And that is probably one of the things that, from the outside, people who probably don't know you, that's one of the accusations that they do fly at Steve King, doesn't it? That you only had success during your career because of the money that you've been given to do.
But I've never, ever, ever had a big budget, ever. Again, we haven't got a big budget here. We got an achievable budget to try and achieve something. If I had this budget at the start of the season, then that's a playoff budget for me, considering what I've worked with before. But I've would always say, and other managers would always say, that I could make a £5,000 a week team look a £7,000 a week team because of my strength with players, negotiations, unearthing players that people are like, where's he come from? Where's he, you know, at a reasonable rate? And they always look at that player and think, he must be on this, he must be on that. But they don't realise your strengths. And some of my biggest strengths are man managing players, getting players for reasonable money. I've always made a team look better than the budget that's been given.
Is that frustrating in a way that your management skills are not actually acknowledged, and instead it's just he's in the top five because he's got a load of money?
Yeah. And I think people see that at Christmas this year just gone, when the budget was completely slashed and it was a bottom end budget, and we still did what we did. So that gave me immense pride to walk away, and people go, you know what? I even had a couple of Welling fans come up to me recently at an Eastleigh game. I went to watch them play at Eastleigh, and one said, we knew you were good, but now we realise how good from when you had your budget cut. That's what they said. And I just said, you'd be surprised at what I've worked with and won leagues with that people think in advance of what it actually is, but it never has been. The biggest budget I've ever had is at Macclesfield, and that was, they come out of the Football League, and that wasn't even a big budget compared to budgets that were in that division.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
Well, Steve, you first came into management circles at Lewis from we saw it, but before that you was Dulwich youth team, is that right? And before that, presumably you played the game as well, but yeah, what was your playing career like, first of all?
Playing career wasn't a big playing career. Played in non-league. Played at places like Carshorten under Billy Smith, Croydon. That was when these clubs were decent Ryman Prem clubs and there was no Conference South. So the next step was the National League. I played at Tiptree over in Colchester that way. So I had a little bit of a non-league career, nothing major. I got an injury quite early and had a decision to make. Do I carry on playing in non-league or did I go into work with a sports management company? So I made that decision to not really continue with the football, and I went into the sports management company and worked for a really massive company that looked after, you know, some of the biggest players in the world, to be fair.
So what sort of position did you play? Football, was you a speedy?
I was a winger. Yeah. I was a winger, just crossed the ball. Everyone used to say I was a decent crosser of the ball. But yeah, I just, you know, I love football, and I just felt, you know, I played at Croydon Athletic as well, played at Redhill. There's sort of clubs around that sorts of levels where those teams now are not doing that great, but back then they were decent non-league clubs pushing to get to what you call the National League and things like that. But yeah, like I said, early in my career, I decided to go a different route and I couldn't commit to doing both. And I liked going into the sports management side, and I had a group of, I think it was about 16 England internationals from the age of 15s to 21s, that age group there, under 16s England, 17s, 18s, they all were into a company that I worked for, and I used to be their mentor and go to their games and tell them where they're going wrong. And so I had a decision to make what gave me more satisfaction, and that did. You know, we had some hell of a players in that group.
I was going to say, you must have found that quite rewarding. What players were you working with? They obviously went on to big and great things, did they?
There was players in that group that were within our company, like Theo Walcott. We had Steve McLaren, the England manager. We had David James, Casey Keller, Colin Calderwood. I could go on and on. Morientes, Real Madrid, and it was a big company. And I looked at Anthony McNamee, who was a superstar at Watford under Vialli. You know, I had him under my wing. I had a lot of Arsenal players, Tottenham players. One of the best youngsters in the whole of England, he was at 15, 16, was a boy called Owen Price, which is a Kent lad. He's involved with doing, I think it's Lordswood. Yeah. So he was a superstar. At 15, he was incredible player. He had everybody in the land wanted him. Everybody, even Barcelona wanted him. You know, I worked for the company in Barcelona, flew me out to have a conversation with them about signing him at 14, 15, when Tottenham had just paid money for him from Charlton at the age of 12. Flew me out there, and I looked around the facilities at Barcelona, the way they did things. It was incredible. I come back and sat down with his mum and said, listen, there's a massive long-term project there. We're talking 5-year contracts, 6-year contracts, but you're 14 years old. What do you want to do? And they decided to stay here and sign for Tottenham. You know, it's decisions like that. Maybe Owen at time will look back and think, geez, if I'd have ever done that, or where would I have been now? And Owen had 5 years at Spurs, and there were so many different managers in these 5 years, from Glenn Hoddle to Martin Yole to Jack Santini. That one manager liked him, and, you know, he thought he was going to get a chance, then he didn't. And that's how quickly it can change, you know. We always sort of say that if Chris Ramsey, who's now head of football at QPR, who was come through the Tottenham, if that had been his coach, 100% probably would have gone on and been an absolute star. But it was different ways, different managers, different styles. He finished his 6 years there and went then to Sweden and played in the Premiership in Sweden. After that, it was the same thing, played under an English manager. Used to be at Man United, and then superstar there, done brilliant there, was going to get a move, the manager gets sacked. Swedish manager comes in, never plays him, and fell out of love with football. It's only now at 28, 29, 30 that he's got back in love with football, and he's gone on to the little bit of the coaching side of things. But he was probably the best player. Well, he was the best player in England, him and Rooney at the time. They used to room together for 2 years in the England group. It's 2 days between their birthdays. And I used to watch him. I used to go and watch him for 15 and sit like this, having conversation with Rooney and him. And it was just to see the players that I'd seen at 15 go on. He was the best.
How'd you make the move from there then into coaching and into management, into football management, because, team management rather than player management, I guess?
Yeah, because when I did the youth team at Dulwich, I had my ideas. I studied football. I loved football at all levels. I was always out watching games. And I always found when I was looking after these young players, I would always say, well, you know, how was training today? How did you get on? How does this? How is that? They would give me horror stories sometimes. The manager don't even talk to me. He just blanks me. He doesn't work on me. He doesn't tell me how, if I'm doing this, I'm doing right, I'm doing wrong. And I always thought, you know what? To get the best out of players, you have to manage players. It's a man manager. It's a skill. And if you can work with them and talk them, tell them where they're going wrong, they're going to respect you. With me, I've always been that person. Black, black, white, white. I've always been boom, straight. You like to hear it or you don't want to hear it. I've never tickled someone. I've always told them, boom, as it is. And I think that way I've always got the respect from people. And when I was looking after that group and the stories I heard, I started to think, you know what? I manage players. I understand the game. I've played it to certain degree levels in non-league football. I know what the needs are. I'm going to look to see if I can get into management. So I met a guy called Johnny Yems and Dave Garland. And Johnny Yems used to be at Bournemouth and, you know, got promoted to the Premiership with them as chief scout and all that. And I used to own a sports shop, and they came in my sports shop one day and was chatting away. And they said, you interested in, you know, coming over and being the 18s manager at Dulwich? And I was like, yeah, yeah, definitely. Went over there. First season, won the league. And then back then they used to have a shield when you had to play off against this Southern, against the Eastern, against the Western. Anyway, we won that as well. So at that time, the first team manager was Dave Garland. Martin Ead was the chairman, and I was doing the youth. And at the end of the season, I think Dave left, and I think Martin Ead took the job. And Martin Ead said, do you want to come and be my assistant? So I thought, yeah, yeah, why not? So Martin was a nice guy. I've known him, you know, 20 odd years, always talked football, but he knew my strengths with players, and I think that was the catch for him. I was younger, he could be the manager, I could bring the players, recruit the players for him to push the club on. But there was a scenario in that the more better we did and the more better players I get in, Martin loved it even more. So people were saying, give Kinky the job, come on Martin, you be the chairman. But Martin loved it, he's a football man, he loved it. So in the end, the Lewis job became available. I had no contacts there, nothing, didn't know anybody. I said to Martin, would you write me a letter to say, back then it was a letter, could you write a letter to say what I've done, how good I've been, or what I've, what I haven't done? He said, yeah, of course I can. So I knew a few people in the game that at the time were big non-league managers. You know, Billy Smith was Crawley manager, I think, and Gary Hill was Dagenham, and they all and Terry Brown, they're people that I'd helped over the years recommend players to them and found them players, and they've done really well for them. So they all put something together, and I sent it to Lewis, and Lewis invited me down for an interview. But I think there was an interesting one, because I went in there and there was five or six people all looking and sort of didn't know me, didn't nothing about me. I'll come from nowhere. And they said, what do you feel you can do with Lewis? And I just said, well, I feel I'm capable of, where do you want to go? And they was like, whoa, like straight away, really? And I just said, well, where do you, you know, what do you want? And at that time, I think I knew a lot of Brighton players and a lot of names, ex-Brighton players, that went for the job. And I think they wanted to move the club in a certain, slowly, because they had a bigger picture of doing a big, massive sporting hub at the back of Lewis's football ground. So they, I think, employed the unknown just to be steady. But little did they know what they was employing, because of my strengths with players has always been the massive strong point. I then got into a situation where that I had one interview, I went away, and I thought I conducted myself well, and a guy called Terry Parris, who's the record appearances for Lewis, as I was going out the door, he said, sort of shook his head and said, "Say, you're spot on there, you know, sort of thing." So I said, "Oh, thanks, pleased to meet you." I didn't think I was going to get it. I thought it was a decent little club that was kind of going places, and I never ever dreamt that I was going to get the job. And they rung me the next day and said, "Look, we like what you was. Could you come again?" And I was thinking, "Yeah, no problem." Went down there, and at that day it was just the office was full of people. I was thinking, "What's going on here?" And they said, "Look, we've been so impressed with you. We would like to offer you the job." So I was like, "Whoa, okay." I was taken back, and yeah, I was keen. I was I'd love to take the job. I wasn't there. I wasn't the fans again. First choice. They wanted a ex Brighton player, etc. But I knew in my head, because I studied and watched the league. Even then, I knew what I was capable. I knew I could bring better players than the level. I knew I could. So it was pre-season. So I built a more or less a new team as well. I kept a few of their better players and built a new team. And you know, I bought a striker from Man United. He was at Man United. And this is where it comes to the connection of where I was working with younger players when they got released from Tottenham, Chelsea, Arsenal, whatever, and we got on trials at clubs and they never made it. I used to say, "Listen, it's not the end of the world. Come drop into non-league football. You can go again. You can get a move again. It's not dead." Just, and I was already in the mines, so I was bringing in players that had no right to even be at that level. And we brought a boy called Mark Whiteman in. I'll never forget him. Mark Whiteman was the bit top goal scorer at Man United all the way through the age groups, and used to play with Van Nistelrooy in the reserves and all that. So everyone was like, "Where have you got this?" He lived in Jersey. We got him a little. What I first introduced into Sussex football was that the club got rented a house out. It's common practice now, but in 2000 it wasn't. So we got four players in there. The rent was £200 a week, and each paid £50 each, so they paid their own way. So he was one of the ones that went in the house. He came in, he scored 30 goals in the season. We had another boy called Lee Newman that scored about 100 goals in 100 games. So our front two were good. And then I brought people like Junior Caddy in that were, you know, fantastic character. Brilliant footballer. He wasn't the bravest, but on the ball he was different class. And his character and how he brought that team together, I always knew out of all the players he was going to be one that was going to go on in the coaching world or something, because he's, when you spoke to him, it made sense. And he was one that when I was at Dulwich he was at Woking. He used to be at Coventry as a player, and he was at Woking. And I said, he was just sitting on the bench. I said, "Cads, you're not going to get in there, mate. It's all right sitting on the bench with your name on your back." This is what I said to him. "But come and play. Just come and play." I got into Dulwich. And when I left, he left with me. And then we started to build a team there. Peter Adeniyi, and, you know, Peter was a fantastic player at them levels. And we built a team that was, I mean, our first game was against Horsham. And that was... that's your rivals. That is your local right. That hatred of them two clubs was unbelievable. We beat them 6-0. And John Max, the manager, been there for years, just said, "Wow, like, this is another level to this, what this league's ever seen." And he said, "You'll win the league." That was after game one. And I think we played Horsham twice more that season and beat them 6-1 and another score. It was just, the players we had were way advanced of the level.
You won back-to-back championships, didn't you, as well? So you put yourself in the Conference South, and you still then two fourth-place finishes, although you couldn't play in those playoff games as well. I mean, the rise must have been amazing.
Yeah, I mean, we winning the Ryman, what it was called, the Ryman 1 South then, and then we had to go and play Yedin, who Drax was the manager, Johnson Nipolite was the manager, Drax, and he had a good team. He had DJ Campbell, Marvin Morgan, and David Clark. He had players, you know what I mean? And I remember a little side, we went over there and they hadn't been beaten near enough all year. Or I think there were two defeats. And we went over there and I think they already thought the game was won before we even went over there, you know. We ended up beating them 1-0. Mark Whiteman scored for a header. And it kind of blew them away because they wasn't expecting that at all. Then we had to go into playoffs, a bit like the Super Playoffs that Tunbridge had just sort of done. We had to go and we went to Basingstoke, and I mean these are places that had proper players in their teams now. When you sit back and think of the teams now, you know, they had Craig McAllister in there, Sergio Torres, and these are proper footballers that have had careers now, do you know what I mean? So we went there and beat them 4-1, and then we had to play Kingstonians in the final, and on the Thursday night it was going to be at Kingstonians' ground, and then we questioned the rules because it stated that we should have been at home. I didn't know the complete details now, but I did know at the time, and the FA looked into it and they flipped the game within 24 hours, and it got played at Lewis, and we beat Kingstonians. Warren Houghton scored the goal. Works for the Sun newspaper now. He scored the winner. We won 1-0. So it catapulted us to two divisions, which was history. He never got done again from that. And then we just felt the group we had, people going, oh, you need to change this. I felt, knowing the teams that were going in it, I didn't think we needed to do too much, and we didn't do too much. I think we finished third, we finished fourth, or something like that. But we won, back then it was the only top five, you know, and we wasn't allowed to play in the playoffs. And I think Cambridge City got a bye to the final, and the other year someone else got a bye. And that was heartbreaking, because what had happened, I'd flipped all of everything, what was the script, that go along slowly. And we've jumped two divisions, all of a sudden we're in the Conference South, and they're like, whoa, what are we going to do here? How can we get around this? What can we do? And they thought we were going to slow down then. Well, we just kept going. And I think Martin Elliott, a real lovely owner at Lewis, we come on to how I lost my job and et cetera, and what it did. And he just said, you're fourth, we ain't in it. I'm really, really sorry to sat down with me. So we really don't want to lose you, but we probably will lose you, because what you've achieved here is, you know. And I'm a loyal guy. I really am. Sometimes I'm for my own foolishness, because maybe I should have seen the writing and then moved. I stayed there and then finished in the playoffs again and couldn't take part. And he said, look, we sat down, we had a serious conversation. And by then, I'd set up all of the football in the community at Lewis, into the schools, into the kids. We went from a fan base of 250 people to 1,000 average. And sometimes gates of 2,000, 3,000 in local derbies. I built that all, and I felt like it was my club, and I felt like it was part of me, that I didn't just want to walk away. And he sat down that day and he said, I promise you that if we make it next year, this ground will be up to the standard that needs to compete in the national. And then we went and won the league by 9 points over Eastbourne Borough.
But it didn't end the way you wanted it to end at that time, did it?
No, it's probably one of the... You know, I've got some stories at different departures at clubs, and it was probably one of the hardest wrenches to come away, because we'd won the league, and the last game of the season was at home to Weston-super-Mare, which I think, if they, in hindsight, if they had looked back on it, they would have done it differently. You know, they called me on the Thursday, and said, can we have a meeting on the Friday, day before we're lifting the trophy. It was in his accountant and Martin Elliott and a guy called Kevin Powell. They were the two running the club. So I said, can we have a meeting? So I said, yeah, no problem. I'd already heard stuff. I know so many people in the game, and so many things were coming back to me that I kept seeing someone at a game, and I got told there's an investment going to come via someone. And I just thought, you know what? I can't control that. I can only do what I can do on the pitch. So let me just focus on that, knowing there was stuff going on behind the scenes. He sat with me on the Friday and said, look, we don't know how to put this, but we can't continue to go on about them two financially. We ain't got the money to take it to the next level. So I said, fair enough. I understand that. So they sort of went, wow. They couldn't say it, because they knew the 5 years of my life I'd given to the club. So they put a bit of paper on the table and they said, look, someone's going to come in with an investment, but they want to be the manager. So I said, okay, right. So they said, look, this is some of the reasons. So I'll never forget, it was sponsorship deals that this guy was going to be bringing in. XL, the ex West Ham sponsor, that the aeroplanes XL. Skint, someone called Skint that was Brighton's sponsor, Fatboy Slim's band or whatever. So it turned out that the guy that was coming in was Brighton's commercial manager that didn't know really nothing about football, never managed in his life apart from a Sunday morning outfit. But they couldn't afford to sponsor to run it no more. So they believed in what this guy had said, that he could bring sponsorship that would make them never to pay a penny in their pocket again. And they went with it. It was as simple as that.
How much did that hurt you? Because, you know, you'd built that team and presumably you was excited by the challenge ahead.
Yeah, it was... It's even tough now talking about it. That's you know, I left there in 2008, and that's 10 years ago, and I'm still hits me now when I talk about it, because it wasn't right the way it ended. I understood from them guys' point of views, and they never, you know, they did the right thing that they had to do to. But what they did do towards the end of it was didn't pay this bill, that bill, because they realised these guys were coming in with the sponsorship. But what happened was they never come in with a sponsorship. So it left them nearly hanging with a club that nearly went to the wall because they believed in what this guy was going to bring in. So they stopped paying certain bills in their HMR and things like that. And then it was only a man that loved the club called Steve Iberson that got sponsorships in and everything to pay the HMR bill that had to be let go because this guy was coming in with all the sponsorship to save the club, but he never come in with a sponsorship, and that was where it all went peaked on, really.
The one thing that does surprise, well, not, I don't want to surprise, might be the wrong word, but the one thing that does strike me, Steve, is that you left Lewis, the next destination was Northwich Victoria. One, how on earth did you end up there? And two, I mean, 109 days in charge, 10 defeats in 14 games. Your first match that you won was the last one before you resigned, and you had a transfer embargo as well. I mean, you could have picked an easier one to go to after Lewis, surely.
Yeah, but, you know, I, if I'm honest, it was the day after leaving Lewis. I went and met Woking. No one knows this. They will now. And I went and met... I went around the house of the owners at Woking. And... at that time, it was we come more or less agreed a deal. I knew they were speaking to two others at the time, Justin Edinburgh versus so, you know, someone I knew for a long, long time, a number of years, and great football guy, and we used to talk and things like that, and there was an outsider that I never see coming and Justin never see coming. I remember our conversation, me and Justin, we was away on holiday in separate places, and I'd already met with the owners and I thought it was a deal done because I knew on the Saturday night the newspapers were running on the story on the back page on the Sunday that I was going to Woking. And then lo and behold, I think it was on my birthday, May the 30th, it was on my birthday, and I got a phone call from the chairman at the time and said, look, we're going a different way. And I was like, what? I've been around your house. We've sorted the contract. We've sorted the deal out. You know, we've agreed. We've agreed on the figures that you... Yeah, yeah, yeah. But we're going to go a different way. So I thought, you know what? In my heart, I thought, okay, there's nothing I can do. If you're going to go with Justin, brilliant. I've got nothing to say. Justin, great guy. Was at Fisher. You know, started his career like me. But he wasn't obviously a top... player at Tottenham and started his non-league career, and he went to Newport. You know, we had good flow conversations. And then I remember me and Justin spoke to each other. He was in one country, I was in Spain, he was somewhere else. And I said, Just, you got the job? And he said, Kingy, you got the job? And I was like, no, I ain't got the job. And Justin went, I ain't got the job. I went, no way, who got this job? And then we said we'd speak tomorrow or whatever, because it was going to be announced the next day, and we were just blown away by the person that got the job at the time. He had, you know, listen, he'd been a footballer, but he had no experience of conference level, no experience of anything, and he'd been living in Vietnam. And I remember Justin me saying, no way. And Justin went, no way, way. No, it was some funny little conversation we had, and we couldn't believe it. And then I think the guy lasted 9 games in charge at Woking and then got sacked. And then, yeah, they went, then I think they give it to his assistant, and then it went from there. But it was just, we were, Justin thought I had got it, and I thought Justin got it. When he told me I hadn't got it, I thought Justin definitely got it. Great candidate, perfect. And Justin felt the same way, that he never got it. Oh, King, listen, I've got no qualms. You've got a record. You've done this and done that. And lo and behold, none of us got it. He got it. And it was just a wild card that the chairman at the time was into seminars and speeches and all that sort of stuff. And he just felt he had this guy that was going to take Woken onto another level with Chinese players and Vietnamese players and all that sort of stuff. And I thought we've got bought into that. And hence why none of us, me and him, never got the job.
And Northwich, how did you end up there?
There was an owner there called Jim Rush, and we had a mutual friend that knew him. And just one day I went to watch Crawley, actually, because there was talks that I was possibly going to go Crawley. And I had a meeting with someone, and I went and watched the Crawley game, and it was against Northwich. And I got talking to the Northwich chairman, and he's a bit of a lad. I got a well with him. A lot of people said not right things about him and all that stuff, but I got on really well with him. And he said, like, this is gone. This, like, will you come in and see? I said, look, I'll come in and try and steady the ship. That's all I can do. And you don't actually realise until you get into a place what the hell was going on. You know, Dino Marmaria was the manager. It left, so they had no manager. One of the players was doing it, gone for a couple of games. And this is probably at a brand fantastic stadium, but it's one of the ones that has just completely blew my mind to think, do I ever want to be a manager again? Because what you think about off-field antic, what was going on at that club was, you know, they were locked out of the stadium. We had to play at this ground, and then at that ground, we had no training ground. Players wasn't getting paid. We had turned up with no kit. He wouldn't let us get in the stadium to get our kit out of it, the old owner. And Jim was such a lovely man that, and he had things going off the field with his wife passed and that. And I wanted to be there for him. And like I said, it goes back to the loyalty thing. I could have walked after one or two games and realised, wow, I can't turn this around. It's impossible, because no one was getting paid and I wasn't. And I was commuting from where I was living to Manchester, and it was too much. In the end, literally come to a head after about 10 games, and I just said, Jim, I love you, mate, but I can't do this no more. I can't do it no more. And he said, can you just stay for that game? And then one more, and then I ended up leaving, and I just had to say it was untenable. You couldn't, no one could turn that around, because one thing, having bad results, there was no one getting paid. There was nothing there. So there was nothing to build on. So I had to walk away from that point.
For the latest reaction and reports from the games that matter, visit our website at kentonline.co.uk.
Obviously, you leave Northwich. You then have success at Farnborough. So you're proving that Lewis is not a flash in the pan. And then you end up, after couple of successful seasons at Farnborough, you're back at Lewis briefly, and then you end up at Macclesfield. Total extremes, I guess, from doing so well at Farnborough to such a mixed time at Macclesfield as well.
Farnborough, 2 years, won the Southern League, which is a tough league to win, physically tough. It's not like the Ryman League, it wasn't back then anyway, it was like proper like Southern teams, you know. We end up beating Nuneaton to the title, I think by about 5 points, something like that. And Nuneaton, Kevin Watkin was the manager, he's Brackley manager now, Wrexham and that. Good guy, good manager. But we had a team, we had a hell of a team. That team there was something special, that team.
Would that be the best team you've managed, would you say?
No, listen, for all different times I put unbelievable teams together, I thought, but I just felt that we played 4-3-3 in them days, and our three central midfield players was Daryl McMahon, Jack King and Gary Holloway, and them three had everything. Everyone used to talk about them three. You had the steel of Holloway, you had Jack King with big presence, and end up getting a move to Preston from that, and Macca, he had ability, you know, left foot, great left foot, and You know, Mackie used to be on the phone every day when he played for me. Just wanted to know stuff. Wanted to talk about football all the time. But them three were amazing. We had Bouvier up top scoring for fun. Michael Malcolm and Dean McDonald, and that time Dean McDonald was one of the best little forwards, number 10 around. And I felt sorry for Dino because he'd done that well that Paolo de Souza, I think, was Swansea manager at the time. I think just got promoted from the champ. They were in the championship, I think, and they wanted to buy Dean McDonald. And I wrestled with the owner. I said, sell him. They were offering, I think, 60 grand or something. And he said, no, I want 150, because Steve Morrison went from Stevenage to Millwall. I said, all due respect, Steve Morrison had done it year in, year out in the National League and got a move to Millwall. Dino's just done it in the Conference South. And in the Southern Prem and in the Conference up, you'll get your 150, but you'll get a down payment of that. And when he does this, and this, you'll get to where you can't stop the boy's career. You can't. He wouldn't have it, and it ruined Dean McDonald. He never got his move, and it was quite never quite the same again after that, Dino. But we got into the obviously we won the league that year and got into the South, and we didn't have a great start. I think we lost three or four games, and I think that in the end cost us the league championship. We ended up runners up to Braintree. I think Rod Stringer was Braintree manager at the time. We ended up runners up to them, and which was ironic because Farnborough Woking was the derby, wasn't it? It was the one in that neck of the woods, and we played away at Woking first in front of, I don't know, 4,000, 5,000. We beat them 1-0, and then we came home in the second leg at Farnborough, and I think we drew the game 1-1, which put us through on the aggregate, you know. Gary Hill was a manager then. And then we played Ebbsfleet in the final, which was Liam Dash, and I've got to be honest, I think 3 or 4-0 we beat him away in the league. And we lost 2-1 at home after we battered them in the 2-1. It was, you know, Preston Edwards was like Superman that day in the league programme. But I've got to say, in the final, up to 85 minutes, they deserved to win the game, hands down. We didn't turn up. It was 5,500 there at Farnborough. We didn't turn up. 85 minutes, didn't turn up. Didn't deserve nothing from the game. I think Westie scored a hat-trick that day and ended up getting his move to Crewe, I think, Michael West. But after 85 minutes we scored one and thought oof, and we could see their bench was getting a bit twitchy. We scored two, we went 3-2, and it was all over them to get that third goal. And Preston has pulled out one of the best saves you'll ever see. It was going in the top corner and he's come from nowhere to stop it from being 3-3 all. And then I think 96 minute, because we were just camped, they count their actives, and I think it was Cullen Willock scored, make it 4-2 in the final. But I've got to say, after 85 minutes, there's one winner. I absolutely totally deserved to win that final.
How did the Farnborough ending come about there then? I know you touched on ending various clubs, in that you won't go into too much detail, but you left there and ended up at Macclesfield. But how, I mean, because you've done so well for 2 years, yeah. they couldn't have asked for any more,
surely? Yeah, no, they couldn't have asked for any more. But I think, again, I can't speak too much about certain things, because it's, you know, sometimes it's best not to. But you know, I left Farnborough, they owed me a lot of money, because what I did by getting to the levels I did, it triggered another contract, an extension of another two years. So I think they wanted to just go a different route, maybe a cheaper route, a cheaper manager, maybe whatever route they wanted to go down, they decided to. I knew he was going into financial difficulties, the owner, because his business wasn't doing what they were doing previously. But yeah, I ended up walking away from there, and we agreed something. I walked away, and then they never ever honoured it. He then sold the club. It went into administration. Everyone was waiting 3 years for their money, and in the end, no one ended up getting their money. You know, what I did for the club in the 2 years there, we built up fan base again. I went in there, the fan base was 400. But I know all these figures, they're just there. You know, we was getting 1,000 there, 800-900 as an average. You know, he had big ideas, Simon Hollis, big ideas of the club and all that. And I bought into it all, and I thought, yeah, this club's going places. But I think the way he went about it at the end, it was, in my opinion, was all wrong. And I remember the last 3 months of the season when we got to come runners up and lost in the final, the club, the players never got played for the last 3 months of the season. But we all said, listen, let's just do this. We'll fight for our money at the end, but let's just do this. And as a group, we did. We got to, you know, we just lost in the playoff final again.
Macclesfield, that was FA Cup fourth round for the first time in their history. You beat Swindon and Championship leaders at the time, Cardiff, and then you lost to Wigan, wasn't it? And they went on to play in the final that year.
Yeah, they Wigan won the final. Listen, that there, for me, going into a club of that Football League club, because that's a Football League club, although they had just been relegated, they're a Football League club. And I had to, because the budget was being shaved so much from the year before, coming out of Football League and then going into the conference, they cut the budget quite a lot. So I had to rebuild more or less the whole team. I think I kept five players, what was not on brilliant money from the team, and then brought in 15, 16 players. But that team, the dynamics of that team was, I'm going to say that team was probably the best team I've ever put together. Just everything about it. Listen, there's other players that would have played in the team, like Andy Jury and people like that, could get into any of my teams, but, and Steve Robinson and people like that. But that team there that I built there was something special, because they said it was frustrating, because there was good teams in that league, like Newports and Cambridge United. You know, all these guys in the football league now, and Macclesfield faithful there that had been there 20, 30, 40 years, and said it's the best football team they'd ever seen put together in that club. And we were top after 10 games, you know, top of the league. And I think the owner, a guy called Amar, and had been there 10 years or whatever, he'd been there, had never had a team top of the league ever. So he flew over and he was like, everything was, you know, fantastic. We'd embarked on a cup run. I ended up selling four players throughout that season, tune of over six figures. Big FA Cup run where we made a lot of money, and appearances TV and radio and et cetera, you know. So a lot of money came in. But with that cup run become injuries. There was a transfer embargo that no one ever knew that existed at the time. I couldn't sign anyone, get anyone to replace, you know, when Matthew Barnes Homer got injured. It's the best season Matthew Barnes ever had under like myself. He scored 25, 26 goals, and he was on fire. He scored two goals in the Cardiff game, actually, to get us through. I couldn't replace the players. And when you're losing the 25-goal man and certain other, we were always tinkering. We was in the top of the league. We was in the top six, seven. We was always tinkering with the playoffs. So for me, when I was brought in, it was, can you stabilise the club? As in, can you be mid-table and push in? And then next year have a go, because I signed a 2-year deal, so have a go next year. And I went, yeah, I think that's sensible. When you're rebuilding a club, you can't just go straight back up. There's not many clubs that do that. I think in the 30 years there's about four clubs that have done it. And I said, I think that's a sensible thing. But what he did by getting top of the league and them seeing these players, like, where's he come from, you know, and it changed people's expectations. They expected, well, if you're top of the league, and we can actually get promoted this year. So that was kind of unfair, brought on me by a team I put together. But everywhere we went, Richard Money at Cambridge United was a manager at the time. We went, that's the best football team you've seen in a conference. And Gary Sweet, or Luton owner or chairman or whatever he is, he said that's the football was you know, on par of anything he's ever seen in the level. So for building a team, that was the one for me. But again, people don't realise the politics that are inside football clubs. What I had to work with inside that football club was, I've never spoke about it. I've just come away. I've never spoke about it. You know, I still had a year left and we come to an agreement. But the politics inside that football club was hard because the owner lived in Baghdad. So he was getting fed information that, when you can imagine going into a job that you wasn't really wanted, not because it was you, because they wanted someone else. But I was the owner's choice, who wasn't in the country. I was walking into Lions Den, really. But the day I got that job, the guys there didn't want me. They said, Steve, it's not you personally, you're caught between a crossfire, but we wanted someone else. And I think at that time they wanted a guy called Steve Burr. Steve Burr was England assistant manager and had a good Kidderminster, a good non-league career. And I think they wanted him at that time, and they didn't not because it was me, but they just that was their thing. But the owner said, no, it's this man. So I met the owner in I think it was Harrods, and we sat down and had a coffee and a chat, and he was like, yeah, I think you're the one, set the club forward. So we had that meeting, and he basically told them, this is the man we want. And it put a lot of noses out of joint, and so I was always up against it. But all the time they were seeing a fantastic football and a cup run and the money and selling the players, and it was brilliant. But the minute there was 3 or 4 results, you knew that people were going to jump on top of you. And he always says now, the owner, and I've spoke to him recently, always says now, if he was in this country, I would have still been at that club. I mean, it's the one club that, when you think about recruitment, and I look at a lot of people's recruitment, and I look at a lot of conference sides, and you get one or two go off to the Football League at the end of the year, don't you, from the conference, because they're good enough. But that team there, 17 players went to the Football League. That is, for me, that will never be done or reached ever again. That whole team, 17 players went League One and League Two. And there's even 3 youngsters now that I gave their contracts to from the youth team at Macclesfield that have now gone on. James Bolton went to Shrewsbury and has gone on to, I think, Championship club now. A boy called Arthur Ganoa was another one that I signed who's went to Shrewsbury. He's gone back to Macclesfield now, I think. And Paul Lewis, he's gone to Cambridge, central midfield player. I gave him his debut at Macclesfield as well. They're players that I gave contracts to, the first year pros as such. Another 3 had gone on. So if you add them to the 17 that went on, I mean, that's, for me, that's recruitment at the highest level. And that is, that's, don't just happen without study.
You are, I mean, you mentioned being a studying manager, someone who really does his homework, and does that, would you say at times you're over obsessed in that way, or is that just how you need to be the best manager that Steve King can be?
What I always say is when I sign players and they're at a decent age that have got a chance to move on, I always like to say, you know, people say, oh, would you ever stop a player from going on? No, I wouldn't, never. I like to be the one to sit here and go, or helped him, or I found him, and I, you know what I mean? They get where they want to go, and then the club get looked after, and you put another one on the list of people that you've helped and worked with. So I'm probably obsessed with football. Like I said, I've got my family and my life, my children and that. They're the most important thing in my life. Then it's my football. But, you know, I'm going out to all levels. I was, you know, even Wednesday I was at Lewis Three Bridges, and people said, what are you going to Lewis Three Bridges for? Because you never know. You know, I always say, you never know. And, you know, to be, I normally go 150 games a year at all levels to unearth someone. I might get a call, Steve, if there's a player that's playing for here, there. I'll always go and have a check it out to see if it can, if he's good enough, if he can make the team better. Then, and it's a knock-on effect for everyone concerned.
Who are the best players you've spotted when you've been out and about on a wet, rainy Wednesday night in, well, not necessarily in Lewis, but across the country?
Well, there's a lot of players that, you know, there's 30 players that I've worked with that have gone on to Football League and Premiership, Championship, League One and Two. And, you know, 3 sort of ones that are most recent that people know will be with, like Solly March, who's playing the Premiership at Brighton, and Jed Wallace at Millwall. I had him at 2 clubs, and I always said to him, you'll be a player, you're a player, you'll be a pro, 100%. You know, took him to Portsmouth, they signed him immediately, and the rest is history. You know, Jed's playing regularly in the Championship with Millwall, and the way he keeps playing, he could get a move from there. You know, Joe Rowles at Cardiff, you know, Joe's played 200 games now in the Premiership and Championship. They're ones that I had under my wing, and I thought, you're going to be players, 100%. And ended up selling them. You know, that's 3 just to start with. But, you know, I found Leon Legg in the park, and Leon Legg was just like, wow, he was like, Leon was like a physical, he was like an animal, your head and kick everything and everything that moved. But you could see that he had something. And, you know, Leon's, you know, gone on to playing for Brentfords and Gillinghams and all that, and made a good career, captain of Port Vale now. And their players are literally playing in the park with a man and his dog. But you could see certain things.
One club we haven't talked about is Whitehawk. Very unfashionable to many people. You went in there, won end of one season, didn't you? Well, halfway through a season, didn't you? They'd strip it all out left. And you almost kept them didn't you?
No, the first... I went in there in the Conference South and they were 15 games to go, bottom two, 7 points from getting out.
So this was first time around?
Yeah.
Yep.
So we knew in 15 games we had to win 8 games to stay in the league, which is over 50% of your games. And we were going into the last game of the season and we reached the target where we were out of it. And I think it was Hayes and Yedin was playing Dover, and Hayes and Yedin were playing at Woking's ground. And I think Dover scored in the last minute to win the game, and we scored to draw with Sutton 3-3. And it kept us up on the last game of the season for that game. And Sutton had just won the league or getting promoted or in the playoffs or whatever. But it was from where we were to get that was a massive achievement. And then we said, right, now we're going to build. And even that team there, that Whitehall team was a special team as well, I've got to say. Because that's another one where you question your management of players. The quality we had down at Whitehall, and let's get it right, you know, the Whitehall Stadium is not the greatest, is it? It's
how big a sell was that to get players down there?
And people used to say, oh, it's the money and all that, and the money was okay. It wasn't the best, it wasn't the worst, it was okay. But when I'm not going to say his name because I don't want to put names on here, but I can talk about player A, for example. Player A was on £500 a week, gross, lived in Bethnal Green. So he had to get to Whitehawk Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday if it was a home or away. So if you take £500 a week and take the tax and national insurance off of that to start with, you're probably looking at 400, 380, 400. Then take his expenses off of that. And then the time he was getting home from training, that player was paying about £250 a week. Now, if I mention who that player was, you would be like, no way, impossible, blah, blah, blah. But absolute fact, these players bought into what we did, and we had an unbelievable group. And it was only Sunday night, I was looking back at a photograph that there was a very, very good photographer at Whitehall called JJ Waller. He's got his own, if you look at JJ Waller's stuff, his stuff is quite amazing. He's the photographer, and he captured a row of players all in a line in the dressing room, and I just looked at the players and I was like, Sergio Torres, Scott Nielsen, Sam Deering, Paul Lorraine, Lee Hills, and I just thought, for the level, what a team we had. And there's another one, we got to the playoff finals that year, and we were better than Boreham Wood, we were better than them, and we should have won the game, but they beat us 2-1 on the day with extra time, and I think we kept most of it together for the following year, where we went on another cup run there, and we drew with Dagenham, who were a league club, and then we lost the replay after extra time 3-2 live on BT Sport, and the winner got Everton at Goodison Park, you know.
How hard was that not to get that Everton? And you were really close to beating them as well, yeah. If I recall watching the game.
Yeah, we should have beaten them. We should have beaten them in the first game. We scored 95th minute to equalise, but we should have beaten them in the first game. We had a goal disallowed. That was a perfectly good goal in that game. We looked it back, and everyone looked it back in the replays, and it should have stood. Mendy scored for a header. But, yeah, we lost the replay on a sodden pitch. It was bad that night, bad. That was fans that they'd never, ever seen at Whitehall before. It was like 3,000. It was flares. It was just an incredible atmosphere that had never been there at Whitehall. And they're the times that, as owners, they got to look back at and go, amazing, amazing times, you know. And to lose and not get the Everton game, which was potentially £500,000 game to the club, you know.
How do you judge Steve King as a manager? Because when you look at some of these clubs now, talk about Whitehall's probably a really good example because they've dropped back down again, down the pyramid since you've left there. But do you judge a lot of it in terms of not necessarily how you achieve, but what's happened after you've left, and that the clubs necessarily aren't at that still at that same level? Or do you look at it that you're punching above your weight when you're there? How do you judge Steve King, the manager, in that way?
I believe there's the proof's in the pudding. That's my people make decisions in football clubs, whether they're right or wrong. Only I can look back and think, I know I was hard done by at a lot of football clubs. I was, if I could ever spill the beans on all of them, I would, but I don't work like that, and I never have done. I think it's important to keep my powder dry, and I always have done. So you never see in the press that I've slagged off clubs, you know. So, but I think you've only got to look where we were at all these clubs and where they are now, and I just think you've got to make your own opinion, draw your own opinion to that.
Does that strengthen the bring it back to the modern day, but does that strengthen the desire almost in you to be long term at Dartford? Now you've got this 2.5 year contract, you'd probably love it to be longer and to really build time can grow, but does the fact that you've sort of done it so well in 1, 2, 3 years over a lot of clubs that you really want to build something special here?
Yeah, I said to the board, and I think they won't mind me probably saying, but one of the questions at the time is what length would you like to be at? What length of contract were we talking about? And I said tongue in cheek, I said, just give me 5 years now. And then we started laughing and all that. But I want longevity. I think a lot of questions are asked to me by a lot of people out there. And, you know, you might have spoke to people and they said, how have you not been in the Football League with what you've done in non-league, and you've took the levels you're in, you've done all you can in the levels you're in. How have you not? And I've sort of said, well, I think it's going to be, I might have to take a team in there to manage in there. And that's probably the burning thing inside me now. No, I haven't been given that opportunity. And I think a lot of people have been given the opportunity and haven't. I'm a person that thinks you should earn an opportunity. I cut my teeth at grass, you know, low down. I was doing it for next to nothing. It was costing me to do a job. And I think over the years, you've built enough credit to go, you deserve an opportunity. There's people that get those jobs that haven't deserved an opportunity. But it is what goes round, isn't it? It's a merry-go-round. And they seem to do poorly in a job and then jump on another job and get that. It's the same thing. But I think I may have to take a team in there to fulfil what I feel was my ambition to go on. You know, and you know, I look back at what Danny Cowley's done, and you know, I used to talk with Danny on the touchline. He was at Concord, and we had rivalry and all that. And you know, he got given the chance, and what he did when he got given the chance is absolutely take it with both hands, and he's done unbelievable. You know, from Concord to Braintree to Lincoln to what he's now doing at Huddersfield, and there's people out there that can do that. But what he's done, he's been given the chance and he has grabbed it and he's gone on unbelievable levels.
Dartford Football League, is that potential? Is that possible?
As a club, the site, you know, the stadium and the thing, I think it's potential. Oh, there's a lot of stuff that needs to go on the background. But I think that will grow legs. I think if you was managed, lucky enough to get promoted to the National League, then they know they were in it before. They know probably where they went wrong or didn't go wrong or didn't do or what needs to be done to make that change. You need an infrastructure of stuff. You can't just wing it when you go into those levels. You have to have things in place. And I think when you get to that level, I think this year, this personal year, to get out of the National League is the best opportunity. I don't think there's a runaway. There's a Salford in there. There's a Tranmere in there. I think... It's why I said to, I was talking to Jerry at Bromley, who's a good friend of mine, that this is the year to get out. And he said, I totally agree with you, Steve, totally agree with you, that it is the year to get out. And Bromley, they got a good chance this year, very, very good chance. You know, they're in the top three or whatever, they might be top second, whatever. They got a good chance. And I think was correct in saying there's years when it's the best year to get out and there's years when it's tough to get out and it's not easy. But I think for the National League, this year particularly is the one to get out. So if you're in it, get out before one of the big hits come back in it next year or whatever you want to call it. So as Dartford got the potential, 100% it's got the potential, but there's stages that we need to go through. You know, we've got a season here that we need to keep pushing, do what we're doing, but I know we will get to where we need to as a group, whether it be this year, it will certainly be by the start of next season that we will be 100% pushing for the championship. That's in my timing, we will be pushing for it. I'm saying we're going to win it, but we will definitely be pushing for it.
Next two games against Maidstone United, obviously in the league this weekend, and then the weekend after in the FA Trophy after the draw was made. John Steele, obviously at Maidstone, is someone you know well. You worked for him at Dagenham, didn't you?
Yeah, I've known Steele a long, long time over the years, and You know, we always, you know, when I was at Lewis and we kept in touch, and I used to say to him, I've got a player, and I used to help, you know, say to him, you know, this player or this player or this player. Sometimes he'd say, yeah, yeah, we'll do that, and or no. And then when I was out, when I left one of my clubs, and he said, look, why don't you come in and do head recruitment for me, head it up. He said, you're brilliant at players and you'll recommend players. And so I sat, just thought about it, and I just thought, listen, I'm out of work, why not? And we went and had a meeting, and immediately we done it. And I started to control that, and had sort of 6 or 7 scouts underneath me, and just send them to games. Great people. His people that are behind him, his scouts. John has had them, looked after them for years and years and years. And then really nice group of people. And I just cover games, cover players. I was a player there, go and have a look, what do you think, etc., etc. Yeah, and I've done that for a bit of time, and enjoyed it. Was I missing the dugout? Yeah, you do, but sometimes it's nice to have a little break and do something different. I'm still watching football, seeing games, seeing teams.
Talk about longevity, John Steele's time in the game and time in the dugout as well. Is that something that you aspire to, almost, in a way?
Yeah, listen, John is, what he's done in non-league and even up to League One, really, is not many people surpass that, will they? You know, that's a fact. I think he's been promoted out of the National League 3 times, or won it 3 times. I mean, you know, what can you say? He's still got the bug for it, you know. I see him at the weekend. I went to their game, and you know, he's epitomised non-league, isn't he? Everyone's got different ways, and John's got his way, and I'll have my way. But at the end of the day, he's someone you've got to look to and go, wow, he's won that league, he's won that league, he's been promoted out of that league, he's done. And he sold players as well. So I kind of look to that. And when I started mine, and I think, you know, I've managed to win this league, and promoted and cup runs and sell players. So that's someone I look to, that what he's achieved, you know.
Steve, time has beaten us, as always. We could chat probably for another hour about your life in football and your career and the successes. I will add in, because you've managed to miss out somehow in the last hour or so, that you are unofficially the most successful manager in National South points per game, I guess. I'm not sure there's going to be anyone that can beat you. It's been brilliant, Steve. I really enjoyed your stories, looking back over your managerial career. And we wish you all the best with Dartford as well. And I hope to see you keep climbing up that league table.
Thanks for listening to the KM Football Podcast. Click subscribe at Audio Boom and iTunes, and keep up to date with the latest stories at kentonline.co.uk.